I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss equity in the Clark County school system, concerns over resegregation, and the West Broad Market. All that and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Blake Odd from Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald. So welcome back, everyone. And I guess we'll start with the school system and equity, since there's been some recent movement on that. Lee, why don't you start us off on that?
Well, the most immediate thing was that last night there was a three-hour meeting of most of the school board on equity in the school district and the lack of and what can be done to reduce that. And we're talking about things like AP classes, gifted classes. That's where the white kids are disproportionately, and the lower level classes is where the minority kids are. And why is that? What can you do about it? The equity movement, which is really occurring, I think, in lots of places in the country, is seeking to redress centuries-old marginalization of people. Demond Means thinks it does not have to be that way and has brought in consultants and is really doing what looks like might be some fundamental restructuring in the school system to try to fix that. Remains to be seen the success of it, but it's definitely a real thing and one that I think that we've kind of avoided dealing with, not because people don't think it's important, but because it seems so difficult to address.
And you mentioned basically it's in-school segregation. Once you get in the schools, that's where the classes are so divided.
Yeah, and that's not something that's just in Clark County. By any means.
Right. This is a national problem.
Yes, but one that people seem to be talking a lot more about lately.
You know, I think so much of this is that new generation coming in and with eyes that are not fooled by thinking that we've made progress. I think they realize that we have a long way to go. And I'm especially saddened by this because when we were one of the first school systems in Georgia, for sure, and in the nation, there were not that many that had the level of pre-K programs that we have had in this community for over 20 years now. But we should be seeing the results of that.
But we are not.
No, we're not. But we should be. You know, that means that we need to be looking.
Well, not all children get into pre-K. There's a waiting list of over 1,000 children every year who can't get into pre-K.
Right, right.
Because there's not enough funding for all of them.
Right. I wonder
that's
if
a lot of kids left out.
Yeah, I mean, we signed up my daughter this spring for pre-K, and luckily we got in, but I learned this, you know, in that process of signing her up, that it's not a guaranteed thing.
No.
And it's done by lottery, so, you know, there's it's just random chance who gets in and in which school and who doesn't make it. But, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of kids who – and there are other programs for, I think, like low-income families where, you know, you are guaranteed a slot, I guess. And there's a three-year-old program as well, I think, for for low-income families too. So maybe a little different there, but I do know there are a lot of kids who don't have access
kids.
To
that's
pre-K.
A lot.
I believe it was about 1,200, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right. But we're one of the largest in the state, so we have more resources than most counties. But anyway, I would love to see us start from the beginning and give full attention to all those children, bringing them up to grade level by the third grade, and that's not happening. I worked with a third grader yesterday. I mean, not yesterday, but Saturday, that didn't know her left from her right. That is not good.
Well, and Dr. Means has talked a lot about that disparity as well in the past, where, you know, he's you know, really brought forth these statistics and emphasized them in a way where they hadn't really been emphasized before, which was the gap between Black and Hispanic and white students in terms of their reading and math proficiency. You know, the African-American kids are behind the Hispanic kids who are behind the white kids. And that's really a district-wide thing at every school. I mean, even the higher-achieving schools where the test scores are highest overall, they have the same gap.
That's the most prominent.
Right. So, you know, everybody moves up or down in the different schools, you know, but if the school, if the test scores are low, everybody's going to be low, but the disparity is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the level of disparity, if that makes any sense. But
I understand.
Yeah.
It's hard for someone like me on the outside to really visualize how you fix that. But one thing that the consultants talked about, interestingly, was just an attitude. And one part of that attitude change is that it's not an achievement gap, but in Means words, an achievement debt that is owed to these children because of all this history that still continues to shape their lives today, the history of slavery and so forth.
And that makes a lot of sense because the number one indicator of how well a child is going to do in school is the level of education of that child's parents.
That's right.
And so when you have a group of people who've been really denied the educational opportunities that other people have had, you know, then it makes sense that, you know, maybe they're not going to read their kids as many books. You know, they're not going to be able to help them with their homework. Maybe they're not getting enough food, you know. I mean,
not enough time
things of
at
that
home
nature.
Because
so,
they're working three jobs.
And parental engagement is a big thing. Yeah. And you're working three jobs and you can't be involved
you're
in
single
schools.
Single parent,
sure.
Et cetera.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into this. And it all does relate back to that, you know, that history.
Sarah Ellis mentioned an interesting thing, which she is probably somewhat more sensitive to than most of us because she's a real estate agent and a former teacher. But she was talking about geographical inequity in the context of places like Chase Street Elementary and Barrow. Chase has the highest white population of any of the schools in the district. It also has the highest scores. And she was saying that it has become a neighborhood school for the white families who live in that area, which is driven up, she didn't mention this, but has had a tremendous effect on real estate values. But the Black children who attend that school are bused in and tend to be from families in poverty. And so that in itself imposes a hardship when it comes to participating in school activities for the parents, going to the principal's breakfast.
You can't just walk to school. It's not in your neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah. The Boulevard parents, they walk their kids to school. And, you know, their kids from, like, Rolling Ridge, you get bused in, or Hispanic kids from up around Vincent Drive who are in the district, you get bused in. And, you know, and I'm willing to bet that, you know, and I live in the Chase District, and I mean, most of my coworkers do too. And, you know, of course, we have white collar jobs where, you know, people can take off for an hour and go to the PTA meeting.
And really not be missed or make it up later.
Sure. And I mean, right.
You don't even ask, you just tell.
You have that flexibility. And if you're working at the poultry plant, I mean, you know, they're not going to let you off for that kind of thing. So it's a big impediment.
And an hour is a huge thing. An hour or two, because it's never just an hour. It's going to be a couple hours that you're going to be involved at least. You can't just walk off some jobs like that.
And even if they do let you off, you're going to lose the money.
Right.
So if you're paid by the hour.
And you may not have grandparents that are that free to come like so many do. I tell you, one of the things that we keep mentioning here is families. And a lot of schools have made room for families to come in, for those parents to be a part of the student, you know, learning, et cetera. It's really hard to do, but when you see Foothills and you see how many adults are involved in that, it makes you realize that there are a lot of adults that might be willing to tutor after school or whatever. I swear we have got to do some supports that are greater than just, we've got to supplement some of the family roles here as far as introducing kids to left and right.
And that's something that Means talks about a lot is his idea of creating true community schools where there really are community centers and putting things like healthcare clinics in schools and adult education, GED classes, things that will get the parents into the schools.
That's right.
And making them really true community centers for the whole community and not just for the students.
Yeah,
it seemed to me that was part of his vision for the West Broad Elementary
That's right.
School.
It's a nice segue there.
Very nice, Lee.
Thank you.
Lee just came in here
and
learned the art of transition.
Meetings that are going on now,
right?
Right. Well, this all does have a lot to do with the West Broad School, which we've discussed before, and there are now three proposals for that vacant school building, which, as we tape on Wednesday, will be discussed on Thursday, which will be past tense when this is aired on Friday. But this will be discussed again either this coming Thursday or the week after, a week from Thursday, I believe. So there will be other opportunities. But we learned a couple weeks ago that there have been three proposals. One of them is from the school district itself, which was a little bit controversial because why is the school district putting in a proposal for property that it already has plans for, and also, it is opened up to competition.
I don't see why that's controversial.
I think that's
well, but it was on it, for some members of the school board. It was. I mean, it may not make sense, but it was. So, and that does involve this vision of community schools where Means wants. We were talking earlier about early learning. He wants, I think, 14 new early learning classrooms to eliminate that backlog, that waiting list that we were talking about, in addition to a health clinic and a parent resource center and some other facilities. Mm-hmm. Whereas the original plan had been to make it administrative offices, but now there's some question about whether the building is big enough hold all of the administrative offices.
And decentralizing might be part of the solution to that.
Well, they're already decentralized. They're half in H.T. Edwards and half at Whitehead, and that's been a problem.
They're all central office staff is what I mean.
Right.
I think there needs to be a little bit more distribution of those kind of minds out there in our schools so that there's a closer integration of that, those two levels. But and the other thing I would say about West Broad Market is I have felt from the very beginning that we need to be working closer with Hill Chapel Baptist Church. They have that huge, a large parking lot over there, a beautiful gym.
They've offered the use of the parking.
Yeah.
They have.
They have a huge community center. They're where our foods are given out on a regular basis. There's a lot of activity there that leads them into being that community center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this issue has really gotten caught up in the Market Garden where the Land Trust operates, the Athens Land Trust operates a community garden out there and has for about 4 years. And they have a farmer's market on Saturday that's really become part of the fabric of that neighborhood and is a pretty popular both among, shoppers and vendors. A lot of people in the neighborhood, sell goods there and sell produce, sell prepared foods, and things of that nature. But because the original proposal, they were going to pave over the garden and turn it into a parking lot, which is where the church comes in. They offered their parking if the school district would save the garden. But
generous offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not using it that much during the week. I mean, this would be 8 to 5 Monday through Friday for the most part. So, but Dr. Means has a different vision for it. And then the Land Trust would like to take it over in partnership with Athens Clark County. They can kick in a little SPLOS money in addition to the SPLOS money that the school district is putting in.
3 years of subsidy, operating subsidy, too, was in that proposal.
Right.
Right.
They would be renting, they would rent spaces to various community organizations, but many a Twix slip cup and lip.
Well, there was a third too. I think that was fairly similar.
a business-oriented one, as I recall.
Right. I think it was. It had a. I think there was a recording studio in that one. Maybe there were definitely some different details, but I think the overall concept was pretty similar to what the Land Trust had put forward.
On a fourth that missed the deadline.
But it was much less detailed, I think, and didn't really go into much about how, you know, they would pay for this beyond, I guess, the money that's already been committed to it by the school district.
We seem to have two conflicting good things going on here. There's and it remains to be seen if they have to conflict, but there's this valuable community service entity that has been created with the Garden and the Land Trust, and then there are the school boards and the school districts, rather, needs.
The way that the Market Garden has gotten wrapped up in this, I think, has created a little bit of resentment.
Yes.
As well, because originally, you know, this was all about preserving and restoring a historic African-American school, and that's gotten at times a little bit lost, I think, as we discussed the garden. And both of these things are very important, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but at times it has become a debate of either or, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
Yes, right. But and it is, in everyone's defense, it is really hard to, I think, put these things together easily.
Well, and I hope that's what Means can accomplish. And of course, there was a vote to, I guess it was last week or the week before, that failed, you know, to instruct him to make a recommendation on one of these plans or, you know, combining features of them into one. But
in the absence of Vernon Payne, who would have been the tiebreaker, who is very ill.
Yes.
It was a 4-4 tie, which meant that the motion failed, and so now that's why they met on Thursday to take another crack at this. But it's been very contentious for several years now, and the board just can't seem to come to any kind of agreement, even on a way to forward, let alone, you know, an actual plan.
You know, it's unfortunate that ACC's approach to the West Broad, to that area between Broad and Baxter, did not work on this more, because I really think, you know, we have a whole bunch of that Brooklyn Creek project that went through that. It's a large swath of that area, a lot of places that were flood places, et cetera, and the banks of that, and then we have like two or three locations that are fenced off, that are separated out, where they have to be carefully looked at, but that they are the kind of place that a lot of places uses gardening, you know.
Yeah.
So I think we need to, you know, gardens can move. It's been there a long time, and it's great. It was first established there so that kids could come over and work there, you know, that were from the alternative school. But it may be a time when we can look at another spot and make it better.
Well, there was a proposal to move it, but the plot was like a third of the size. And, yeah, I think the garden can stay, because the issue was they needed more parking. And so if you can find a way to solve the parking problem that doesn't involve paving that over, if you can find parking somewhere else, or if you choose a use that doesn't need as much parking as offices, then the garden becomes... There's no reason to take it away.
Right. The church has solved that. And you also have that office complex across from the church, that is never full. I mean, it's much larger than is needed for the type of businesses that they...
Well, they haven't been cooperative about sharing their parking, from what I'm told.
I'm not surprised.
And it's for sale now, isn't it? And I don't know where another place would be. I mean, it's a great place for the market and garden.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And two of these three plans incorporate it, and I think Means' plan didn't include it or exclude it. He totally stayed away from that. And I don't blame him, because I remember the board's property committee had a really, really knockdown, drag out meeting about this very issue on his second day on the job.
Oh.
So, I mean, I'm sure that made an impression on him that, whoa, this is something that it's a little bit of a minefield here.
Right. You know, Means is a man that strongly believes in a certain way, in a certain doing things in a certain way, and targeting things. And he comes in here with having shown what his priorities, his personal principles, et cetera, lead him to want to do.
That's why the board hired him.
And that's why they hired him. Yeah. And so nobody should be surprised at him taking a strong hand and saying we're going to, and especially when he sees the numbers that he's seeing.
Well, I mean, and there have been, you know, there have been some complaints about him lately. He's ruffled some feathers, but, I mean, Lee's exactly right. This is what they hired him to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the very reason he was hired to shake things up, you know, because we haven't made the progress that we should have been making for a long time.
Deconstruct the system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So try something really different.
Right. And I hope you'll look, again, at administrative offices and whether or not there's some jobs there that need to be blended in to our system rather than centralized.
For example?
Well, I mean, you talking about health clinics and that sort of thing, that's very strongly the kind of thing where you're moving around your schools, that you should have that expertise out there working with those
people.
Well,
they do have nurses in each school now.
That's right. Yes, they do. Mm. But, I mean, so that's an example. You can go to nutrition and talk about it as far as being very school-based and very school-located. You can go to, of course, counseling and that sort of thing. I think Dawn does a great job. You know, I think that we're really lucky to have what we have. And they've taken a lot of gutsy stands and shown results in a lot of places. It takes a lot to provide the level of support that our school counselors see is needed for some of these kids. And curriculum development. Curriculum development is something that has, in the past, when I worked for the school system, it was not in the central office, but it worked with the central office.
Well, there's been a lot of debate about curriculum lately with this AVID program and the role of the local school government
and the
teams.
And the new equity program. That is also involved.
Well, and AVID was supposed to help with the equity issue, although AVID is not technically a curriculum. It's a method of teaching, but there's been a lot of debate about how involved and how much authority that the new local school government teams under the charter system have in terms of, you know, things like
anything.
Well, anything, yeah, right. Which means is taking the stance that they're advisory boards for the most part, and I think he's correct about that.
I think that's what the law says.
And that's their role. They don't usurp the authority of the board, school board, or the superintendent. So.
They do have things that are a little beyond advisor, like picking candidates for principal.
Right. But they still don't make the final decision. I think they just pick the finalists.
Yes. Curriculum seems to be a perennial nightmare for teachers and administrators because here we go, changing it again.
The one thing we haven't talked about is how much support for public education our legislature has taken away by allowing people to privatize their schools and be subsidized.
Well, for the first time ever, they fully funded QBE. So we are, the district is getting all the money that's owed to it from the state for the first time in 30 years.
Yes. Could it be an election year?
Well, there hasn't been an election year in the past where they fully funded QBE.
Yeah,
there's never been a year, period.
Right, they're a little worried this year, I hope.
So, I mean, that's a good thing. You know,
it's a great thing if that's what it takes.
That's an extra almost $2 million for the school district.
I know, but that's been promised so far. Look at libraries. They are promised, and by our Constitution, they are promised support on a population basis. They don't get anything. They get less than a third or something like it. It's worse than that. Of what they're promised by the Constitution of the state of Georgia. So maybe that's the next thing we should be looking at is getting our libraries funded.
Well, you have to say our library does really great work.
They do really great work because they get a whole lot of money from local taxpayers.
That's right.
In addition to what they get from the state.
Amazing staff and an amazing director.
Very true.
The programming there is just kind of mind-blowing.
Right.
But I'm just saying that without SPLOS and without the local contribution that we couldn't have that amazing staff and the amazing things that they do because the state.
They certainly wouldn't be able.
That's right. Yeah, it's not the state at all. You're right.
Because we could talk about how the SPLOS robs Madison and Oglethorpe counties. because they have to come in here to Clark and spend their shopping money.
Good.
Well,
yeah, they should be contributing. Over 40,000 people use our community.
They deserve good schools, too, and school buildings.
That's great, and they should be in a situation. Look at where they are related to us. We're not that high a taxing entity either. I mean,
but
we're doing...
We're maxed out for the school district.
There's an enormous tax base here, though.
Right, there's an... Yes.
We've got buku property.
But we can't
charge any more property tax.
Yes. Over 50% is on the dole.
Yeah, and 57% untaxable, too. That's
yes,
right.
Untaxable.
Well, what about poor Oconee County?
Yes, I know.
Poor Oconee County. One of the few places in the state, and Clark County is, too, really, where I believe sales tax collections are actually going up.
Yeah, and this is one of my pet peeves when everybody talks about, you know, all the businesses fleeing Clark County, and I'm going, well, why is our sales tax up $1.5 million?
That's right.
I mean, we got businesses opening up all over the place. I mean, you lose a few high-profile big boxes that, you know, people notice, but, you know, they didn't leave because of, you know, over-regulation or high taxes or anything like that. They left because they could have a brand new building and a brand new development. They're probably downsizing because of the internet.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. But we've had replacements for them and then some. I mean, our tax base is growing at a very rapid clip, both sales and property.
That's right. That's why we need to be thinking right now about the SPLOST and the importance of that, because we can raise a significant amount and make a big difference. And we just talked about how important Means is for schools being community centers. And, you know, once before we put our development of each school as a park, we put that on the SPLOST, and that's worked pretty well. But what we really, the next thing I think is that we really need to recognize how much of a community center our library is, and that we need more libraries in this county.
Well, that was an election issue, a library on the east side, and it's probably not a bad idea. I mean, if you live on the east side, it's hard to get over there to the library. It's probably a 15, 20-minute drive. So,
I think an east side library has arisen to a number of people would want and expect, really, to see that happen before too long.
Well, you know, the library suggested it, recommended it, and submitted it for SPLOST last time, and then withdrew it. And we don't just need one on the east side. We need one on the east side and north side. We need to start looking at the outer.
And without a jail on the next SPLOST, we're going to have a lot more free money than we did last time. Not free money, but money freed up.
I wanted to say that the Madison County and Oglethorpe County school districts are really good school districts, but their buildings are not. It takes them years and years to accumulate enough sales tax money to build a new building or put a new roof on a building, even.
I'm going to have to let that be the last word, Lee. I want to thank my guests, Gwen O'Looney, Blake Odd, and Lee Shearer. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, WXAG, Flagpole, or the Banner Herald. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.